I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, your daily dose of news with the constitutional and principled perspective. We are giving you fact, not fake. We are giving you truth, not propaganda. We're giving you principle and not personality. And I know that right now you are completely saturated. You have been completely inundated with Trump, Putin, and Helsinki. But let's talk about this from a constitutional perspective. I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. And I find it quite interesting that, you know, we've been saying for a long time that their media is giving us our dictated narrative and how the left gives the narrative and all that happens is even on the conservative side, people keep just repeating that narrative. And now that narrative is being dragged back into now in these international relations. You know, the dictated narrative, yes, there was Russian involvement. But what does that have to do with Trump hate? I think there's a lot of people who really want to know, what did the Russians do? Did they do anything? And to what extent is it possible that they may do it again? But what's that got to, why is it always about Trump?
That's all they know. I mean, how else to explain it? It's the Trump, the never Trumpers and the left, you know, are always going to be on the same side of the narrative. And it's just look for any opportunity to attack.
Right. But then the conservative side of the narrative picks up that narrative by issuing the defense. Why don't we just simply skip the narrative and get into a real discussion about the facts on whether the Russians were actually doing what they were alleged doing? I mean, I think it's absolutely ridiculous, these 12 indictments. 12 indictments on 12 people that will never come to court, that will never be questioned in the public, that will never, ever have to speak anything and will never be cross-examined. The American people will never know anything about the factuality of these indictments.
Yeah, that's pretty convenient.
And I think it's very inconvenient. And now we know,
I mean, if you're Mueller and the left and or Mueller or whatever his name is.
Well, now Mueller. We know. Yeah. Now we know Mueller is saying, okay, well, we're now going to transfer this case to a
counterintelligence National Security Council,
counterintelligence,
right? Yeah.
Which puts everything classified,
yeah,
that you can't see it.
Right.
Not only that, it is a never-ending open investigation.
Right.
Which means as long as the investigation is open, there will be no discussion by anybody about the investigation or no release of any documentation regarding the investigation.
Right. So you make these broad accusations that are, I guess, generally accepted by whoever supports the narrative. And then we're going to shift this to National Security Council. That's it. You'll never see it again. You'll never see the evidence. Then, you know, hey, we indicted these 12 people.
Conveniently, right before Helsinki, right? I mean, how convenient is that? I'm sorry, that's too that is too coincidental to be not planned.
Yeah, that's political, clearly. Rosenstein, these guys.
Right.
I mean, it's just corrupt. It's corrupt at the very top and just part of the. I don't know. It seems to me that, I mean, I listened to, who was that? A quote from Wolf Blitzer. Oh, we've never seen anything like this before of Trump's attacking the intelligence community in front of our enemy. And I think they expose their hypocrisy. It seems to me they're losing credibility, even more credibility. And I don't know. I get the sense that a lot of people don't take them seriously. And the left's hysteria and the Never Trumpers' hysteria seizing on some of these things that make them look ridiculous. I think it's good. Let them show themselves for who they really are. I just think they look silly. At the end of the day, I think when it's all said and done, they're just going to look really silly.
But, you know, I don't think looking silly bothers the radical left.
They seem to be completely
impervious to this idea, this understanding that they look ridiculous.
I'm talking about the perspective of the voters, the American people. I think they're going to lose. They lose more and more support from the American people.
Where are the people turning to? I really hope, though, that by the loss of support, I hope that means that the people will not be completely checking out, but then turning to alternative sources. Because, you know, the mainstream media is doing a really good job of discounting alternative media sources. You know, that we have the term fake news that was being used against them, but then they turn around and say, well, if you're not really a bona fide media outlet, then we can't trust you. You've got Facebook, who's doing their own policing for fake news. And
you think they're doing a good job at that?
No, well, I think they are effective to a certain degree, and I don't mean just with the left. I mean, I think with people who are very centrist, you know, people like my parents and your average suburbanite who all they do is sit down and watch news on the television. You know, they're not going to take the step out to go to the internet and say, well, you know, this news on the television is completely unreliable. So let's now turn to the internet and look. I just simply don't think that's generally what's happening yet. I'm hoping that's what's going to happen, but I don't see that happening.
I hear that. I hear that's common in conservative circles and liberty movement and that sort of thing. I don't give them that much. I don't have that much confidence in them. I mean, I hear this. Oh, they're, you know, everybody's believing their lies and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I don't see that. I don't buy it.
Yeah, and when I'm traveling, though, I don't see, you know, when we teach not just simply the, you know, the three percenters and the Tea Party patriots and those kind of people that, you know, the average everyday Joe, they're simply not stepping outside the mainstream media. They will cast stones. Well, they will talk about how unreliable they are, but they still get their information there.
Yeah. I look, again, Fox is not, I understand Fox is mainstream, you know, media as far as that concerns. It's corporate media. It's not alternative media. But if you look at the lefty media, how it's just been trounced for several years running now, just blown out of the water. But I still hear, and I realize they have the colleges, they have the universities, they have Hollywood, they have all that. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't give them that sort of, you know, omnipotent, all destroying power that everybody attributes to them. I don't know that. I mean, doesn't, again, to your point, doesn't mean that the average person is turning to the right sources, but I do think a lot of them are turning away from some of these other sources. I think a lot of them are just checking out. But that's not something, I wouldn't say it's something that they're doing, like they're suddenly doing this. I think that's the average American. That's their everyday, no matter what. It's not something they have to suddenly start doing. Your average person in America gets up, you know, eats their breakfast, goes to work, eats their lunch, comes home, eat their dinner, you know, sleep, rinse, and repeat. I mean, that's just
sleep?
Their day.
They, who does that anymore? Who they, sleeps?
But, you know, the average American is just going through their day, watching their sitcoms, and I mean, they're not this is not an exercise for most people to really dig out this information. But I do think there's a level. Before you get people the right information, you have to undermine the credibility of the wrong information that they've been depending on. And
yeah.
That's what I see happening.
Well, I think the left realizes they're losing to some extent. Speaking of wacky, crazy left, Alyssa Milano.
Oh, goodness.
I know, right? Her stuff comes up on my feed every now and again on Twitter. And in this one, this particular tweet sort of struck me, and so I actually tweeted her back.
Can I just go over here while you talk about her?
Well, here's the story. She says in Twitter, well, this is great news. Massachusetts Senate unanimously passes automatic voter registration bill.
Uh-huh.
So what happens now, according to The Hill and local Massachusetts news, when someone goes into update their automobile, their driver's license or their car registration, or they get a new driver's license, they're automatically registered to vote. And so my question is, and I tweeted her this, I said, which party are they automatically registered to? Right? Because there are many states, including Massachusetts, who do not have open primaries.
Right.
So if
you have to choose
you
a party.
Have to choose a party in order to vote in the primary. Now, Massachusetts doesn't have a closed primary. They have a partially closed primary.
Okay.
But nonetheless, what that means is that you have to declare a party at some time.
Right.
Well, Alyssa Milano is like, woohoo, we need this to happen everywhere. And so the question becomes, what party are you being automatically registered to? Because in Florida, you can't vote in a primary at all. You have to register. And there are a large number of states that are closed primaries for their elections.
Yeah, you can be non-party affiliation in Florida, but
you still have to register as NPA.
Right, but you can't vote in Democrat primary, Republican primary, whatever.
Right. So you show up to the polling booth with your automatic registration. You have to vote primary based on that registration. And so here's the thing. A government that can vote, can automatically register you Democrat, I said to Alyssa Milano, can also automatically register you as Republican. So how do you think about that? Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Have here with me my husband and co-host J.C. Hall, and we endeavor to give you a constitutional daily dose. And I just, I think that this automatic registration that's happening in Massachusetts and in other states is just another kind of indication that the party, the Democrat Party, is they're struggling.
Oh yeah,
and they're scrapping. Yeah. They're waiting because you know some of these
grasping
states.
Grasping at straws.
Here's the thing: some of these states allow allow undocumented aliens, whether they're illegal or not, to get driver's licenses.
Right.
Right? So you can get a green card, you can get a driver's license.
This is tied to driver's license?
Yes, this is tied to vehicle registration and driver's licenses.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, right?
So that means that people are now voting, right, just simply because they have a driver's license.
Yeah, so this is an end around of the whole, voter ID, people pushing to have voter ID. Now, so,
we'll give you ID.
We'll just register.
Yeah.
It's more getting Democrat. I feel I really, on some level, feel sorry for Milano, because you listen to some of the stuff, you get the sense she's sincere, right? It's not like evil, hateful, you know, want to destroy everything. But she's so ignorant. It's just, I mean, she's just saturated in ignorance. It's really pathetic.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, the comments that she gives and the things that she latches on to. But what's more frustrating is...
She's a simpleton. You listen to her comments. She's a total simpleton
Who is struggling for her own relevance, right? So she was a star once, and now she's trying to be a star again. Ugh. And she actually got to speak before Congress on women's rights. Yeah, I mentioned that before. She's weeping in front of Congress. This Constitution denied women the right to vote.
Just an idiot.
And I tweeted her and said, you know, please give me article, section, and clause that you know, of the Constitution that prohibited women from voting.
Did she go to college? I mean, is this the product of our public universities?
No, she's the product of Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
She is the product of Hollywood, which is the same thing at this point.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
So, you know, that's really the very, very sad thing. The good news is, once again, the counterculture.
Sure.
Now, this is going to chaff our sort of statist kind of people, but I just wanted to mention that the nullification movement is growing bigger, and we now have Republican dominated states that are pushing to legalize marijuana in their states. It's not just a blue thing.
Right, which is a form of nullification.
Right, because there's absolutely no authority.
No enumerated power.
No enumerated power.
In the Constitution.
In the Constitution.
Yeah.
For the federal government to regulate what you smoke.
So it's up
what
to,
you eat, what
so
you drink.
If the state wants to say no, they can say no. If they want to say yes, they can say yes.
Yes, it is a power that is reserved to the states. And it's interesting because you have people who are the what I call the federal supremacists, who are completely opposed to any mention of the word nullification.
Right.
They're seriously, people will go to war over that
stuff.
Well,
they've conflated it with what California has done with the sanctuary cities. They are calling that nullification, which it is not.
It
is violating the Constitution. Nullification means that on the state level, you are protecting your reserved powers, and you're saying we're not following along with something that the federal government is doing that's not enumerated in the Constitution.
Now, it is the right and the remedy of the state as the parties to the federal contract that created the federal government to simply say no. Our founders were very clear that if it's not consistent with the Constitution, it is null and void. I mean, it is no law. James Wilson said it has no force of law.
I just heard you have a conversation with somebody about this and then brought up the, oh, well, you support the sanctuary cities, California, what California's doing and nullifying. And that's got to be exasperating to have to constantly answer that.
Constantly.
And I'm not talking about lefties. I'm talking about conservatives and people who are in the liberty movement, and they just do not understand.
No, there's a difference between lawful nullification and unlawful nullification.
There again, men tear up our Constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution. Standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Oh, but I'm only a stranger here. I'm a long, long way from my home. And I'm going to change all the things I find strange. For I am not.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here. Remember, you can always find us at chrisannhall.com, chrisannhall.com, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. And I do want to mention, because we left out at the end of the break with this, there's a difference between lawful nullification and unlawful nullification. And that is something that we actually teach at Liberty First University.
Yeah.
So if you want to know, and there's lots of people out there, like you said, the conservative, that don't understand that difference. My goodness, you've got Jeff Sessions screaming about nullification and how it's a bad thing. And there are certain radio hosts that will want to string you up alive if you mention nullification.
We encountered someone today, this very day, who doesn't understand the term Article 5.
Yeah.
I mean, if you, it's really strange things that ought to be elementary, ought to be fun. Like, there's no argument going around going, hey, are you for or against Article 1 in the Constitution? are you for or against Article 2 in the Constitution? Right.
Yeah.
But there's this, are you for or against Article 5? Article 5 is the fifth article of the Constitution, which delineates how the Constitution is amended, right?
I mean, yeah,
and so it's just a weird, they take the term Article 5 or the fifth article of the Constitution, and that's equated with Convention of States. Newsflash, that's not everything that's in Article 5. That's,
right.
I mean, so that's, how can you even begin to take a stance on any of these arguments, and you don't even know the terms, you don't even know what you're describing. How can you be that off?
The interesting
thing is,
you're
at the forefront of making this argument.
The fifth article of the Constitution is one of the major distinctions that we have between a republic and a kingdom.
Right.
Because the fifth article of the Constitution was placed there so that, as Thomas Jefferson said, as we become more mature in liberty, we need less government,
yeah,
and we can handle more liberty, we're able to amend the Constitution without war.
Right.
And that was the one thing that the founders said over and over and over again when they discussed adding the fifth article of the Constitution on how to amend the Constitution was, hey, look, we've got to get a way to amend the Constitution because, in spite of what Lincoln says, no document is perfect.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to do this different than the way we've been doing it for the last 700 years, because every time for the last 700 years we've wanted to limit government and expand liberty, we've had to hold a sword to somebody's throat. We want a peaceful way to do this.
So it's one of the most bizarre questions I hear people come up and they ask you after, you know, whatever, radio interviews or what, and they'll say, so are you for or against Article 5? I mean, they won't say a convention of states or Article 5 convention or whatever. Are you for or against Article 5? I just laugh inside. Like, what? Okay, sir, you're asking me if I'm for or against amending the Constitution?
Lawfully and peacefully.
I'm supposed to be against lawfully amending the Constitution? I'm just a strange. Like, well, come on, guys, get the vocabulary right if you're going to engage in this argument.
Well, listen, if you want to know more than Jeff Sessions,
yeah,
especially on nullification,
buy a library card.
It won't be hard. Liberty First University, we talk about all this stuff. We have a two-part section on the fifth article of the Constitution.
Right.
We have an entire course on the sovereignty of the states and the authority of and the proper authority of nullification,
yeah,
understanding the distinction between proper nullification and improper nullification, understanding that there is an unlawful nullification. And as a matter of fact,
I
have people who come up to me who are somewhat educated on this, and they'll always show me a document where, because when we present the class, we show you how Madison and Jefferson and even several of the other founders, Alexander Hamilton, were in favor of this nullification. And then they'll come to me and they'll say, well, what do you think about this? And they'll show me this text of James Madison's, mm-hmm, that is purported to be James Madison taking a different stance on,
right,
nullification.
Yeah.
But you know, from teaching the Bible and all that, context is king.
Right.
And Madison never was opposed to lawful nullification.
Yeah, I've seen you go through the full document and what the people pull that out of. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets very obvious. And this is even the way that's phrased, to say the founders, how did you say it? They were for nullification. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a matter of for or against.
No.
It was just this was the principle
that
is at the heart of the Constitution, of the very Constitution as a concept, being a contract.
A compact, right.
A contract among governments, which is called a compact, right?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Amongst Woo-hoo! The states. So it wasn't so, they didn't say.
You're my best student.
But they didn't say, so therefore we're for nullification. It wasn't some mm-hmm. sort of debate. It was mm-hmm. just laying out the principles of here's why the states, I think as Madison said, will be the ultimate judge of mm-hmm. of whether there has been an infraction against the Constitution. So it's only now we're, you know, here we are 200 plus years down the road, and there's so many things we no longer know, that it's framed in this, are you for this, against this, for this, this founder was for it and this founder was against it. I mean, totally really changing the entire conversation that was had at the convention.
Not to change the entire conversation that we're having, but this really is right in there and relevant, because I've been practicing my skills as an apologetic, and I'm sharpening my apologetic sword through social media. And unfortunately, that means that I have to bump up against some really ignorant people. Uh-huh. But it helps me sharpen this. And just recently, I bumped up against a young law school student who is completely and totally indoctrinated into federal judicial supremacy. And I use the apologetic skill that I want us to really sort of flesh out a whole show on this later, but I want to introduce it. Now that we're talking about nullification, about the fifth article of the Constitution, and these things that we need to talk about, are you guys out there listening, the best way to get people to hear what you have to say is to say, not to say it, but to ask a question.
Right.
So I have this young law student. I don't know if she's actually a lawyer yet or she's still a law student, but she comes up and she says that the Supreme Court is the ultimate arbiter of the Constitution. They're the highest authority in the land, and what they say goes. And I said to her, so what is the limit to judicial power? And she says, none. They are the ultimate arbiters. I said, so who has control over the Supreme Court? Well, nobody. And I said, okay, so what if the Supreme Court says that it's okay for the executive branch to round up all Islamic Americans, they're actually Americans, they're just Islamic by faith, and put them in internment camps, because I knew the Islamic thing would get her, put them in internment camps without any due process, and that the Supreme Court says that's constitutional for the executive branch to do that. What would you say about that? And her answer was, well, the Supreme Court makes bad decisions sometimes, but then they have to fix that. I said, well, that's very interesting, because they never fixed that decision, mm-hmm. right? Because it wasn't Islamic Americans, it was Japanese Americans. And so basically we went through this discussion, and I asked question after question after question. And then I was able to get to her. I say, you know what you're doing? You're actually describing an oligarchy. And she just, you could sort of see that. And she couldn't accept it. And then, of course, then she starts slinging me with names, and you're a racist, you're an idiot, you never practiced law, did you even go to law school, did you even read the constitutional law class books that you had, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting, because that vitriol convinced me at that moment that I made her think.
Yeah.
Because she recognized at the point of that vitriol that my argument had merit, and she had no response.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we, you know, like I said, we're a teach show, not a talk show. And I want to encourage people.
That's what we in the South call the scalded dog.
I've never heard that one before.
Yeah. Yeah.
The scalded dog. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. Well.
No animals were harmed during the creation of this show.
Yeah. Well, it's like what they say, squeaky wheel gets the grease or whatever. So, yeah. And scalded dog means, you know, it's like the picture of, you know, granny throwing the hot water out the back door.
Uh-huh.
Whatever dog it hits, that's the dog that's going to holler.
Right.
So
right, right. Oh,
scalded, that means you, that means you nailed her. You're over the target.
Yeah,
you
I'm over the target.
You backed her in the corner, and then that's when she starts barking and growling.
Yeah, and so I want to do that in a way of encouragement. So you're never going to reach people like this without making them think first.
Yeah, and we're going to do a course on that.
Mm-hmm. At Liberty,
First University. But about the question. You have to get people to examine their own thinking. It's not
right.
Your information, delivering information is not primary.
Hey,
that's
we have
secondary.
We have a new article up at chrisannhall.com. It's our friend Victor's article titled, "It's Impossible to Outlaw Crazy."
I say we give it a shot, though. No, I'm just kidding.
He says, "It's impossible to outlaw crazy. The government has a better chance of implementing laws to reduce being struck by lightning." And this is
great
a
great article.
This is a great article. And Victor is a student of ours, and he admittedly a student of ours, and he is a student of liberty. He has learned from lots of real liberty-minded people, but he's a financial guy.
Yeah.
And for him to sort of strike out and write this amazing article on the right to keep and bear arms, right?
Yeah, Hamilton did all right as a financial guy, so.
Oh, well, you're really going to get people slinging arrows at me.
That probably make Victor mad.
Oh, man. Well, no, Victor would not be wanted to
Sorry,
compare
Victor,
to
I'm
Hamilton.
I'm not saying you're the big banker guy. I'm just saying people can multitask.
Yeah.
No, well, it's good. He's a smart, really smart guy, and it's well-written and makes some really great points, well thought out. I really enjoyed it. You know, he sort of showed it to us, and I read through it. I enjoyed it immediately, and so it's good, really good.
You know, we don't have guest authors very often.
No, they got to make the cut.
They got to make the cut, man.
Victor made the cut.
Victor made the cut. Go to chrisannhall.com. It's the most recent article that you'll find when you hit the articles tab. It's worth a read. We'll be right back.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. I want to leave out today with a lesson in liberty. I don't know if you heard about this or not. I didn't see it a lot on the news, but I did see it in different places. We have two Georgia police officers that were filmed using a coin toss app to decide whether to arrest someone or not for driving above the speed limit.
And I first saw the headline. It said flip of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into it, and it was a coin flip app. So
you don't have coins
anymore.
I kind
of immediately knew that the officers were young millennials. They don't even have a coin to flip.
Right.
It's an app on their phone. But I look at them, you know, I looked at there. It's two female officers.
Mm-hmm.
They look like kids, man. And that's the thing that stands out to me. So often we go, I mean, you teach law enforcement and you have mm-hmm. a course that you teach them. And
maybe we can contact this police department,
yeah.
The Roswell Police Department, and let them know. I mean, Georgia's not that far. It wouldn't cost us that much to go. We could just say, look, no charge, free of charge. Let us
constitutional training.
Come get some constitutional training so that your people know how to make decisions and not flip coins.
But what I was going to say, these officers these days, so many of them, they're so young. And maybe that's not a new thing, but man, and maybe I'm getting old. But
I was going to say it's because you're old. Everybody else looks young
like
now.
Kid, but I'm serious. Maybe guys listening, does it seem like some of these officers, they're just kids? They look like little kids,
mm-hmm.
and it's crazy. But I saw these two, and I thought to myself, you know, as young as these officers are, it seems even more inherent today that mm-hmm. you need some serious training on the principles of liberty, on the Constitution, the fact that your job is to protect people's individual liberty, and you have to carry out your duties in that manner. They're not getting this. They're not getting this in the public school. They're not getting this in the colleges. In fact, they're getting the opposite. So I think some really focused constitutional training is definitely necessary in these law enforcement offices today, peace officers.
Well, Roswell Police Chief Rusty Grant said that, quote, "I have much higher expectations for our police officers, and I'm appalled that any law enforcement officer would trivialize the decision-making process of something as important as the arrest of a person."
I agree with you, Chief.
I agree too, but the expectation must come from a foundation.
Yes.
And if they have no foundation, then the expectation is misplaced.
Yeah, the inner expectation has to manifest itself in proper training, I would say.
Well, so it is not only an issue of proper training for these officers, but it's also, this is a real First Amendment issue. Because how else would we have known if someone had not filmed this? Right?
Yeah.
And this is a really important issue. Well, now, I want you guys to know, you're listening, that even the Supreme Court has come back and said that, yes, you can film police officers.
Well, this was a dash cam.
Yeah. But
you know, even some departments kind of push back against that. They resent the dash cams, much less somebody with their phone or something like that. But this is... To your point, this is a demonstration of the utility of that. This is what it's for.
Right. And well, it is the utility of filming these things as they happen. I think that everybody who is pulled over, I don't want to be offensive, but this is a matter of your right. And if we don't get into the habit and become comfortable with daily exercising our rights, there's no reason why you can't film a traffic stop, even your own. And this is something that is your right to do. It is your protection. And my goodness, just here in Florida, we had people pretending to be law enforcement.
I was just going to mention that. That's not the first time I've heard stories
That's old story.
That's happened more times than I'm comfortable with, where somebody comes up pretending to be law enforcement and then something bad happens.
And this is one of the reasons why I didn't like Thomas Hardiman as a Supreme Court pick. Because Hardiman has been very adamant that he does not believe that the American citizen should have the right to tape public officers and policemen. And that's a really big problem, because this is the protection of your fundamental rights. Hey, look, oh my goodness, we're out of time. God bless you guys. We will see you tomorrow. I was one.